Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
We continue marking Easter Sunday on Open House with a great story of survival. This Easter marks exactly 45 years since New Zealand's worst modern maritime accident, the Waheny boating disaster. The ferry was on its way to Wellington Harbour when it got caught in the middle of two violent storms, creating an extra-tropical cyclone. They remain the largest storms in New Zealand's history. After more than 6 hours of battling torrential conditions and many failed rescue attempts, the captain called abandoned ship. With more than 600 passengers on board and only four lifeboats, the boat capsized and began to sink in Wellington Harbour. 53 people lost their lives that day. Out of such tragedy emerged one particular story that we remember this Easter, 45 years on. The Otago University cricket team was on board the Waheny, travelling to compete in the Easter tournament. They all survived. Some went on to play cricket for New Zealand, others became lawyers and teachers, and one rediscovered his place with God. Gary Murphy prayed a prayer amidst the chaos of that night on the sinking ship, fearing his life could be over. He was just on 20. But rather, his life changed forever. His story is one of many featured in a new book just out called The Team That Never Played. And Gary Murphy joins us now on Open House. Gary, welcome.
Hi, Lee. Good
Thanks
to be here.
Very much indeed for joining us. You're a university student and pretty young playing cricket, living your life at this time. I guess life before this seemed pretty good at the time.
Yes, life had been ticking along well. I was a pretty sporting sort of guy, and it was a great sporting environment at the time to be down there.
So you're travelling to an Easter tournament with the Otago University cricket team. What was the mood like before the storm on board the Waheny?
We were looking forward to the game and also the social activities that were sort of surrounding university weeks. Yeah, it was quite buoyant. It was an overnight trip, so we were sleeping overnight there on the boat that night.
How suddenly did the storm hit, Gary?
We woke in the morning and it was pretty rough. I went up top just to have a look at see what the conditions were like, and it was pretty rough, all right. But had no thoughts of anything that eventually occurred happening at all. But while I was up on top, it was then that we actually went into the rocks on Barrett's Reef, entering the harbour.
Take us to that moment.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise. All of a sudden, we smacked into these rocks, and you knew it hit something. And very shortly after that, there was a call for everyone to don their life jackets and go to assemble on B deck and above. At that point, I was upstairs without a life jacket, so what I had to do was to head back down.
And your feeling?
Well, I thought, gosh, you know, I hope this is all right. And I began heading down, and of course, as I was doing so, there was a whole heap of people coming up the other way. So I got down, got to my cabin, managed to get a life jacket from there, and then began my way back up. But by this stage, of course, a huge number of people were well ahead of me. And I ended up on I'm not sure exactly where it was in the boat, but it was a very claustrophobic situation with bodies everywhere sort of around you, no semblance of being able to get to the side of the ship. And I'm a reasonable swimmer, so I would have fancied my chances of surviving, but I realised that, hey, if this was to actually go over now, there's no way I could get out at all. I'm absolutely stuck in here. At that moment, the boat did lurch off the rocks with quite a lurch, but remained upright, which was great.
How chaotic was it on the boat?
They were all sort of, what's happening here? People made their way up onto what was the lounge and areas up further on the deck and began to settle in to listen to reports, if they could, from transistor radios and things like that, of just what the state was.
And then after 6 hours of battling this, the captain finally calls abandoned ship.
Right. During that time, I can remember one of the guys writing a very detailed account on the windowsill of the lounge, and I was chastising him for graffitiing the ship, you know, thinking that everything was going to be all right and we would be towed into port or make it into port or whatever, because at that stage the ship was still on an even keel. But as the time moved on, then there was a big change. It began to list, and I can remember an old lady even beginning to roll across the deck. You know, she was in one of those sort of cane chairs. Mm-hmm. At that point, everyone sort of began to think this list isn't getting any better. And shortly after that, the abandoned ship go to starboard side was made. Okay. People moved quite fast, and some people were, a little bit hysterical.
But everyone understood, no doubt, the gravity of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you knew it wasn't any fun and games anymore. They'd had their chance to sort of tow it in earlier. They couldn't manage to do that. Now we were going to have to get off the boat.
How did you escape, Gary?
I wasn't sure which side was starboard. And I followed most people, which was toward the side further away from the water. We ended up getting onto a railing outside the lounge area and making our way along this railing. And it was sort of like single file. Can't remember sort of helping a little guy, I think he might have been Chinese or Asian, to reach around him and then pull him along with me as we made our way along there. So we were doing this. Some people slipped off the railing, and one or two injuries did occur, you know, with people doing that.
How was it that so many lost their lives that day? As I said, 53.
I think what happened was mainly a lot of bodies were found over on the Pencarro side, over on the Eastbourne side, where there's a rocky area and the tide pulled people in who had actually either not got into a life raft or, in one case, I think one of the life rafts overturned. And there are also all other sorts of dinghies and things with people in them. From there, quite a few people died not being able to sort of hold onto the rocks as they were being driven in by the sea and then being taken out again and then back in. That was quite a horrific scene. It would have been a very horrific scene for the people that were working around that area.
Yes. Gary, at one point in this, you prayed. Why did you pray, and what did you pray?
Well, I was from a church background, pretty regularly at going to church, but I certainly wasn't Christian at that point in time. In terms of, you know, I'm committed to follow Jesus Christ. It was more thing that I had learnt to do. But I did believe in a God. I couldn't see there being any other reason for creation, really. So I did cry out to God. I think I knew from my background that I wasn't really in a great place with God. So I did cry, God, you got to help me here. And I felt reasonably comfy that I would get out of it quite immediately. It was scary up the top when we were making our way across the top railing. You looked into the water. There were heaps of people in the water, life rafts, and a lot of people were there, and you could see, you know, you had a feeling that maybe the ship might flip over. But I think when I prayed that, I felt it's going to be okay. Made my way down the side where people were trying to access the life rafts, and that was a difficult business because, you know, at one stage the boat would be probably about a couple of metres away from the life raft, and then the next thing would be 4 or 5 metres up with just the listing. So I chose to not try to jump into the boat because some people were mistiming their jump, and the boat was pretty full by the stage anyway, the one that I was near. People were jumping and landing on other people. So I jumped into the water, swam away from the boat, and then made my way to the life raft. I'm not sure if it was the one we were going down to in the first instance or not. So I swam over there and was pulled in by a fellow cricketer who was already in the boat.
And all of you guys survived?
In one way or another, we all survived.
Gary, when did it start to hit you what you'd actually been through?
Well, I think at the time I was, very aware that I needed help from God. I made that prayer. I think once I got out of it, while I was aware of perhaps the gravity of the thing that had happened, life didn't change immediately for me. But in a few years' time, I think the Lord maybe sort of has his way with us, doesn't he, and sort of works us into a position where we realize our need of a Savior. That came to me quite strongly, actually 8 years later.
How did that happen?
Well, I didn't have the peace that I knew I should have. That became a little bit of a focus to me. Eventually ended up with me trying other things. I tried a little bit of hypnosis. That didn't seem to make any difference to me. But my wife got involved with a person, and of all things, yoga classes. But this woman became a Christian, highly impacted, and had a big impact on my wife. She eventually went to what was called a Life in the Spirit seminar. As part of that, she conversed with me about it, and eventually I went along to the same one. And it was there that, I guess, the revelation of Jesus really took my heart.
And you went on to become a pastor.
And yes, and from that moment on, I guess, I was fully into it. And eventually became a pastor some 7 years later.
Those events with the Wahine must have made each Easter over these past 45 years all the more powerful for you.
Well, yes, you know, I'm fully converted. I know a relationship with Jesus Christ is the way forward. I'm in education. I see the results of education. They certainly can help people make a way in this life, but for all the education you can ever get, there's nothing that competes with a relationship with God, and that gives you the security and the confidence and just the joy of really knowing Him and knowing where you're going and knowing that you are loved by Him, secure, and you have a purpose.
And you have two survival stories.
I do.
You reunited with the entire cricket team for this book launch.
Yes.
And the 45th anniversary. How was that, seeing all those faces again?
That was great. I hadn't seen any of those guys, in fact, for over 40 years. It was 45 years ago. I only played for the club for a very short window, maybe just over a month. So I only had a handful of games with them. But I was in contact with a couple of the guys in the team who were at Phys Ed school with me. So I had close contact with them, and they were the ones I knew probably the best. But just catching up with them and over that weekend through this book that Ron Cardwell wrote was wonderful. Great to catch up, see where they're at. One of them, who was actually the 12th man and never got on the boat, he has since become a Christian as well. So it was good to talk with him. The others are all in various places, well, I'm trusting that God will be continuing to work in their hearts.
So how do you, this Easter, look back, considering this anniversary and this reunion? How do you look back on those events now, Gary?
Very much of the opinion that nothing is by chance in life. God has got all things in control, and He works all things together for good to those who love Him, to those who are called according to His purpose. I do believe that my story and being there is able to help people. I believe it is able to bring connection with others, and it can be used greatly for the purposes of the gospel and the merits of being a follower of Jesus Christ.
Gary Murphy, I'm so pleased on such a night that you've joined us on Open House. Thank you so much for joining us and recounting your amazing story, your survival stories.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.